I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, episode 40 of Biscuits, Colon, a Hockey Podcast, season 2, episode something or other, the one where we talk about the Senators again, if this was a Friends episode. I am Dave. I am in Brooklyn. You know Sean. Sean's in Ottawa. Say hi, everybody, Sean.
Hey, everybody. Hello from Ottawa.
Are you sick? Because I'm sick, and I can hear my voice in my ears, and I can really, really tell how sick I sound right now.
No, I'm not sick yet. I'm just sitting up here in Ottawa for now. I might just pick up and move this entire operation somewhere else.
Wow. Are you not happy? Do you feel like that your family and your neighbors aren't being loyal to you?
I feel like after the year we had last year, where we talked about Joe Sakic and Matt Duchene all year, I think we should the listeners should be filling the 5-star ratings and paying much higher prices than they are. And so I'm just going to take everything and go to Houston. That's how this works, right?
Well, I don't want to sidetrack the show, but didn't one of our listeners give you a liver so you could stay alive? Like, you can't just do this right away.
That was months ago, Dave.
Wow.
But
I don't know, the timing of this seems weird because we're just about to do our first outdoor podcast. I don't know if you want to do this now.
It is weird. And especially since I admonished you recently for speaking about potentially moving on to somewhere else. And now I'm doing the exact same thing myself.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know where I'm getting, where I'm learning this from.
Don't you think this is going to alienate the listeners? The listeners are not going to be happy about this. They might stay away more now from the 5-star ratings because you're doing this.
I think they'll be fine. I'm a pretty charismatic guy. I trust myself to really sell this. And I think they're going to love it.
All right. I mean, we'll see how this plays in the media. I feel like this isn't going to go over too well, but you know what?
Have I ever been wrong before on anything?
No.
Other than literally everything constantly.
I mean, this podcast, we basically are the billionaires of podcasting. So I don't see how this could ever backfire for us because we're part of the 0.00000001% of podcasting. So I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, but exactly.
But anyway, hey, so welcome to the Ottawa Senators Hockey Podcast. I'm Dave, your resident Ottawa Senators hockey analyst, and that's Sean, who is in Ottawa, conveniently enough. And
I'm embedded here in the leading the Ottawa Bureau. I gotta say, like, Senator fans, you have for years and years and years, you have complained that your team did not get enough attention.
Seriously,
you are always second fiddle to Toronto and Montreal, and even last year in the playoffs, you were very upset that you weren't headline front page news. You got your wish.
Good news:
the Ottawa Senators are the talk of the NHL for the second consecutive week.
I think they're the talk of this podcast now. I think we've talked about them because our first show back was after the Duchene trade. And then after that, it was just about how the trade wasn't working out really well for Ottawa. And I'm pretty sure we had two other ones in there because the losing streak for Ottawa was so long that we kept coming back to it. And now here we are. Oh, we had the outdoor game last week.
The Carlson thing. So now we've got this week, which was supposed to be from an Ottawa perspective, this was supposed to be the good week, the positive one, where we were talking about the outdoor game and how great it was and the alumni game, Parliament Hill, and the Fan Fest, and how Ottawa finally had its chance to shine with a pretty, you know, pretty big ticket event on the weekend where the NHL was celebrating its 100th anniversary of its first games. So this was the part where everybody was supposed to be singing the praises of Ottawa as a hockey market and as a team, and they won the game. Got a big win.
30,000 people. They had the same attendance basically as the Grey Cup, right? Like a little bit of a difference, but
yeah. Well, 30,000. They sold it out. So whatever the attendance was, and the, you know, I can tell you, I didn't go to the game, but I took the kids down to the Fan Fest, and you know they got to see the Stanley Cup, and they had a little ball hockey rink where you could run around and play, and everybody had a great time. So I mean, it was really well done. We went and saw the rink on Parliament. It was beautiful. It was, you know, everything looked great. This should have been an unqualified success. And instead, like just about everybody else, we're going to spend most of our time talking about the Senator's owner who decided that this was the moment for him to play the, I might pick up the team and move it somewhere else card.
I just can't get over. I mean, this always happens when there's new teams and relocation becomes a possibility, where every owner in some market that's not doing well tries to use that new city, Seattle or Houston or Quebec or whatever, as like a bargaining chip. Like, oh, I need a downtown arena, or hey, you never know, we're gonna maybe move. And so it's kind of par for the course when an owner does that sort of thing, even if it was as passive aggressively as Melnick did it on Friday. But man, the timing of it, the whole thing where he was going to die 2 years ago, if not for the fact he owned a hockey team and a hockey fan was like, take my liver. I don't want you to die. I want the Senators to win a Stanley Cup. So I'm going to go under the knife and have surgery that could kill me. I mean, you go under for anesthesia, you may not come back. And he said, here, take my liver, Mr. Billionaire, because I want you to continue to thrive and live your life. And then 18 months later, or however long it was, 24 months later, he says, you know what? I just don't know if Senators fans here have the passion and loyalty to come out and support this team. Like, I, seriously, if I borrow $20 from somebody, I feel like that I owe that person my life. Like, I'm like, I'll get it back to you. Look, I only have my debit card, my credit card. I need cash to pay for this. But I seriously, next time we go out, I'll buy two rounds. I'll get you back. And Melnick got an organ. He got an organ from a person. Not like an organ you play with your fingers. He got an organ that went inside his body and is still there, keeping him alive. And he had the nerve to do that on the Friday before the outdoor game. Like, even Gary Bettman wouldn't do that. That's insane to me. That's an insane amount of rich guy just living in a bubble bullshit. I'm still mad. I'm not even from Ottawa. I'm mad.
When Gary Bettman is showing up and like walking back, seriously, comments, you know,
he's like Homer in the GIF and going back to the bushes.
The context is important here because people need to understand, like, Eugene Melnick, like, I always feel like there's a big difference between what somebody says if they like put out a statement where it's been clearly they've thought about it, they've chosen the words carefully, versus something they say in a media scrum versus something they say when they're maybe caught off guard. So, you know, I've heard from a few people who said, you know, maybe it didn't come out right. Maybe he was caught off guard by a question in this media scrum. But the thing is, he had like a few scrums and media appearances and that sort of thing. Like it on Friday night, as you were like reading these quotes that were coming in from Eugene Melnick, they were coming from different sources. Like he went on TV, he went on, like, clearly this is something where I don't know that it came out exactly the way he would want it to, but this was clearly a topic that he felt like it was time to discuss. And, you know, he picked his time. And I can tell you that, you know, probably won't be any great surprise to anyone, but being up here in Ottawa, it's not playing well. there are a lot of fans who are kind of like, not now, man. Like this was not the time. This was really our chance to enjoy something and like I say, shine a little bit in a spotlight we don't get very often. And instead,
yeah,
talking about the owner and you know, there's a lot of resentment because there's a lot of people here who, you know, I mean, the numbers are what they are. The attendance has not been great, and this is a team that doesn't you know, the ticket prices are not very high, and the, you know, I don't doubt that the bottom line numbers don't add up as well as they would like, and that that is an issue. But there's, you know, there's a lot of fans here who feel like they've been very loyal and that they've spent a long time supporting a team that certainly over the last decade since they made their trip to the final has not really ever been
right
what you would consider a cup contender,
last
year's playoff run notwithstanding, and have continued to support and come out and, you know, pay the prices and sit in the traffic jams and all of that. And to be told that, you know, hey, I'm never going to sell the team, but I might pack it up and move it, was pretty much the exact opposite of what I think a lot of people here were looking to hear.
And the thing that gets me too is, like, the team hasn't really been terrible for the past decade, but you're right, it's kind of been in that like middling area where you're never going to get the first pick, but you're never going to be.
And that's the problem, right? They're stuck in the middle.
Yeah, but up until the last 2 years, they've been pretty much drawing like 18,000, 19,000 on average until this last. It is weird that you do go to the conference finals and then this year the attendance is worse than it was the year before. I understand that. I can see as an owner, you look at that and you're like, what the heck's going on here? But I don't know. I would look inward and be like, hey, what's going on my side of things where maybe I can look inward and have some introspection and say to myself, what is wrong with the franchise where we're losing fans despite having one of our best seasons in a decade, best season in a decade, as opposed to being like, you poor people don't give me enough of your money. Why is that? You know what? I'm going to go somewhere else and let people cheer the team. And like, really, really? That's your reaction to that. So
because that would have been perfectly legitimate. If he had said, you know, look, this is a great weekend and, you know, we're all looking forward to it, but, you know, we do have to consider that, you know, attendance is down and we're trying to figure out why that is. And, you know, we'd like feedback from the fans about their experience.
And tell me what's wrong and I will like, see what I can do opposed to you people.
There was a way to do it. But, you know, the way it came across and I mean, the other thing that, you know, we should make clear here is, you know, Eugene Melnyk said, I'm never going to sell the team, but I might move them. And he made, at a couple of different points, he made comparisons. He compared it to owning a McDonald's.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And he also compared it to owning a grocery store.
Same thing.
He basically said, you know, if you're not selling enough groceries and there's a grocery store down the street that sells more, and, you know, referencing presumably Toronto and Montreal, that, you know, maybe you got to go find a different location for your grocery store. So we should be clear here that owning an NHL team is not like owning a McDonald's or a grocery store. It's not a piece of property that once you own it, you can just put it wherever you want. Like, he makes it sound like all he has to do is pick up the phone and call Gary Bettman and say, hey, Gary, heads up. It's the Houston Senators now. We're heading down.
He thinks
and
that,
Gary
though.
Goes, oh, okay, thanks. Thanks, Huge. Thanks for letting us know. And then that's it. That's not how it works. Like, NHL teams are very, very hard to move. I know Gary Bettman takes a ton of, even to this day, there's a ton of bad feelings from hockey fans because when he first came on board, you had four teams basically move right away in rapid fire. You had Minnesota, Quebec, Winnipeg, Hartford all go in the first 4 or 5 years. But since then, the last 20 years, this league has moved one team, and that was the Thrashers in 2011. That is, this league has been, in terms of franchises moving, this league has been more stable than the NBA. It's been more stable than the NFL in the last 20 years. And that's, like, that's not because things are going great. That's not because, like, everybody just, all these markets are thriving. And there are many markets in the NHL that are doing far worse than Ottawa on its worst day and are doing far, far worse than, you know, for example, Calgary, which is the other team that's sort of playing this card right now. And, you know, the idea that, well, I'm never going to sell the team, but I might move them. Well, you know what? If you go to the NHL and say, I want to move, the first thing the NHL is going to tell you to do is no, go sell the team, go look around. We're going to find an owner in Ottawa. If you don't want to be here, we'll find an owner who does. And that's your option. So, you know, this idea that, you know, if Eugene Melnyk doesn't get his way and he, you know, he gets a little cranky, he's just going to pick up and move. That's not how this works. And it's not how it works in Calgary either. And, you know, for, you know, it's funny. I wrote about this on Friday about the Calgary thing before it happened in Ottawa. Like, I feel like the league doesn't understand the damage that this does. Like, when you've got a product that relies almost entirely on loyalty to keep the dollars rolling in, because teams can't be good all the time. The product certainly isn't good all the time. You're really banking on loyalty from your customers to play this game, even as a bluff. You know, even if it's something like in Calgary where literally nobody seems to take it seriously that they're really going to move. Like, this, it does damage, you know? Like, if some fan out there, and it's not that, it does mean that some season's ticket holder is going to cancel their tickets and never watch the team again. It is, though. Being a fan is
It is a little bit, though. Like, if you're a season ticket holder and you learn that the thing that you've invested in, your time and your emotion in, might not be here because the owner's looking to leave at some point, why would you continue to invest all that? You know, I do think that's a possibility.
It is possible, but even then, like, I feel like this is, we all kind of make this mistake when we talk about being a hockey fan, where we act like it's a switch. It's on or it's off. And it's not. It's a dial. Like, there's a 0 to 10 setting, and, you know, it's, you know, whenever, you know, if the games aren't good because scoring's down, or if they change a rule that people don't like, or if, you know, if when, every time there's a lockout, right, people go, well, what are you going to do? You're not going to be a fan anymore? No, I'm still going to be a fan, but that dial gets turned down, you know,
right,
even if it's just half a notch. That adds up when you're talking about, you know, potentially tens or hundreds of thousands of fans that make up your fan base. You know, if just a few of them feel a little less like they're part of something with this team because you drop this thread on them, that adds up, you know, and it's certainly, vision here in Ottawa already wasn't great. And this just, I've tried to come at it from so many different angles, and I just can't see one where this made anything better for anybody.
You know what? You say that, and now I'm thinking back to the beginning of the podcast where we threatened to relocate. Should we have just asked the listeners what we could do better, as opposed to, because now I feel like that people aren't listening anymore. Maybe we screwed up.
There was kind of a,
yeah.
That does sound sort of familiar now. I didn't really pick up on it at the time because it was really subtle. But
yeah,
I think you might be right.
But with the thing with Melnyk too is that the Senators, the years between 07 and last year when they got to the conference finals, they weren't exactly spending money anyway. You know, like, they were never in the top half of the salary spent of money spent on payroll, and people still went to games. So you should ask yourself, why are people no longer coming, even though we really haven't changed the business model and we actually are better, as opposed to, these cretins, they're not loyal. They're probably watching the Leafs games now, which I wonder is if that's possible, because the Leafs are actually good and fun again. But I don't know.
I don't know if they're watching Leaf games, but I will tell you that it was a lot easier to market the Senators when the Leafs were terrible, because you could just point down the road. And Eugene Melnyk did this a ton of times, where people would say, how come we don't spend near the cap? And he'd go, well, what, do you want to be like the Leafs? They spend to the cap, and look how big of a joke they are. So having the Leafs potentially building an actual contender while all this is going on is just kind of, you know, one more problem. But I don't know. I knowing as many Senators fans as I do and being here, I still can't really figure out what's going on. Like, I don't understand why they're only getting 13,000 after last year's runs. I mean, the Sens fans in general are pretty smart group. I think they understand that last year's run was
fluky.
One of those things that comes along every now and then, and it's great and you enjoy it. But I don't think anyone's walking around thinking this is the third or fourth best team in the league just because they lasted that long in the playoffs. And the one sense that I get is just 10 years of being in the middle has worn on people here, because they sort of feel like, you know, again, they're smart enough to look around the league and see how winners get built. And, you know, we've had that conversation before about tanking, about the Pittsburgh model. Chicago kind of did it. Lee did it. You know, other teams are doing it, not having success, but it's, you know, they can see how you build an elite team. And there's this feeling, and there's long been this feeling in Ottawa, that the Senators will never do that because the Senators cannot afford to miss the playoffs. Certainly for, you know, 2 or 3 years that it might take to do a total reset. And I, you know, I just feel like at some point Senator fans are kind of like, you know, is this it? Like, is this, we're just resigned to always finishing somewhere between 12th and 18th and then, you know, making the playoffs. And then we hope we go on a run, and we had one last year and it was fun. But you know, here we are right back to, you know, to being this kind of stuck in the middle team. And from the flip side, the Senators organization is kind of looking at the fan base saying, we might like to reset and rebuild and build an elite team, but we don't trust you guys to still come to the games. We don't trust that we're not going to be playing in front of 10,000 every night if we're out of the playoff race by November. And, you know, but depending on how this season goes, we might get an interesting test case on that if the Senators don't turn things around, because they might be out of things by January. And I guess we'll see. And if the building is literally half empty at that point, then I don't know where you go from there.
Yeah, but the thing they benefit from this year is they play in the worst division in hockey. So they're never going to be out of it until March, probably, even if they are out of it. Like, they're still in a spot where they could catch up to the third spot in the division. So
yeah, they could. And, you know, the other thing is going to be, you know, what, even if they are out of it, do they say that? Or does it become a situation where you have to keep pretending you're in it? And I'll tell you, you know, get ready to hear the name Andrew Hammond a bunch in Ottawa if they're well out of it, and fans are saying, you know, calling for a real, we're 10 points back, let's trade some guys, let's rebuild, let's aim for the future. You're going to hear a lot of people going, well, remember the Andrew Hammond year when they were 10 points back and they went on that crazy run and slipped into the playoffs. Who's to say it couldn't happen again?
Didn't they lose in the first round that year? They lost to Montreal that year in the first round, didn't they? They lose in like five or six.
They didn't go far. Yeah. So I mean, this is kind of that thing is, you know, in the NHL, if you want to win a Stanley Cup, you got to be prepared to eat some pain beforehand. And it's, you know, some teams it's easier than others. You know, the Maple Leafs could do it for a couple years and still sold out the building and still made a ton of money. And the Senators don't seem to feel like that's an option that's available to them. And there's other teams in the league that are in that situation too. But it's tough. Cause I mean, there's like three types of markets in the NHL. There's the really good markets. And when I say really good, I just mean like from an owner's perspective, you know, the Torontos and some of the others where you go, we're still going to do fine, even if we're lousy. There's the markets that are just lousy all the time, where it's kind of like, well, we might as well finish last because that's the difference between having 10,000 fans and 11,000. So let's finish last, get those 10,000 fans, hope we hit on something and can build a cup contender. And then maybe that's what brings us up. And then you got those markets that are right in the middle. And Ottawa's kind of that right in the middle market where they don't really seem to know which way they can go. And sometimes that ends up meaning that you kind of get paralyzed and you just keep driving straight down the middle lane. And I, you know, at a certain point, your fans realize what's going on and start to go, you know what, how invested do we really want to get in something that we know is very unlikely to ever end with a Stanley Cup and is most likely just going to involve us going out in the first or second round year after year.
But I just refuse to believe that Eugene Melnyk is as poor as he says he is, because like I said, before the past 2 years, attendance was there pretty much packing the building every night. The NHL as a whole, we've never been better, blah, 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 all this stuff. And now you have a season and a quarter where attendance is down, and suddenly Eugene Melnyk is like pulling his pockets out and saying, I don't have any money. If you're worth $1.2 billion and you're not spending your money on payroll, I fail to understand how you can't possibly fund an organization.
He sort of touched on that a little, where he's, you know, I think Eugene Melnyk would have you believe that he himself is fine, but that he's not willing to personally lose money on this team. And from what you hear, and obviously, you know, you got to be careful with this because NHL teams, they don't open the books. And every time you say anything about what the books might look like, they always tell you they're wrong, but they'll never show you otherwise. But the, you know, from what you hear about the Senators, the issue that really seems to be a problem there is that, you know, when you look at what they spend on players versus what they bring in, and, you know, the fact that they had three playoff rounds last year, the balance sheet there should look okay.
Mm-hmm.
The issue potentially is that, you know, dating back to when this team was first purchased, they took on a lot of debt. And the problem with taking on debt is you've got to keep hitting those payments and, you know, and rolling it over and sometimes refinancing it. And you get into a situation where even when you're making money, you're not making money because, you know, there have been some, you know, I saw one post that said, you know, blog post somebody did, but they had a financial background and they were saying, here's my best guess as to where the Senators are at. And their guess was that the team, you know, from a pure plus minus perspective, made a lot of money last year because of the playoff run, but it was all eaten up by debt payments. And so they, you know, they don't end up in the black. And the rumors here in town about, you know, what are they doing with the front office and the scouting staff, and, you know, are they willing to spend there? They've been spending on the team. I mean, they've got one of the higher payrolls in the league. They're not right up against the cap, but they're not that far from it.
But do you know how much debt there is? Like, is there like a dollar amount in terms of like how much they would have to pay at this exact moment to get it all off the books?
No, but it's, I mean, it's in the, you know, and again, nobody knows, but the numbers that float around is that it's, you know, it's in the millions of dollars per year. It's enough that if they don't make the playoffs, it could be a situation where they say, okay, we've got to cut payroll by 10 million, or we've got to cut this or that. And, you know, like, maybe that's where the rebuild comes from. Maybe it's Pierre Dorion going into Eugene Melnyk's office saying, hey, let me do this full rebuild and I'll get your payroll down to the floor for a couple of years.
Yeah. But
and we tread water that way. But then,
if you're worth $1.2 billion and it takes a $25 million check to get rid of the debt, wouldn't you just cut $25 million check as opposed to paying payments every year with interest that would cost you more than $25 million? I mean, like, I'm only going on how I manage my finances. I feel like that's probably easier if you have $1.2 billion worth of, you know, worth. I don't know.
If you have $1.2 billion,
I mean, I do, but I don't.
And if that $1.2 million is real money that you have access to and not paper,
sell some horses, buddy. If you can't afford to run an NHL team, sell it to somebody else. Don't threaten to move it to friggin' Houston.
And that's it. I mean, that's what Sens fans are saying. Is they're that, you know, they're, I'm sure that you know, most Sens fans, I would hope, do remember that Eugene Melnyk. I mean, he came along when this team legitimately was in danger of maybe moving back in 2003. I mean, remember, they were bankrupt. Like, they literally missed player paychecks, which, I mean, when that's happening in pro sports, you know that you've got a really messed up situation. I mean, the players did not get paid at one point during that 2003 season, back under the old ownership. And Eugene Melnyk came along and he saved the team and he kept it in Ottawa and all of these things. And so I think there should be some gratitude there, but I think that it, like, the gratitude is,
yeah,
it, by this point, it's kind of like, yeah, I'll buy you a beer if I see her, or I'll buy you, you know, I'll buy a Coke, but please sell the team to somebody who can run it in a way that is going to allow us to be something other than like the background extra of the NHL, who's kind of there, standing behind the Maple Leafs or the Blackhawks or whoever is getting to be the star of the show.
You gave us a team. We gave you an organ. Let's call it even and never mention either one ever again. How about that? What's your, I know you wanted to talk about the 100 years stuff, and you've broken down what you think are the best and worst seasons, and I'm scrooging it, 'cause I don't really feel like it's possible to do that. But where does, as a Sens fan like you are, where does the 06-07 season rank?
You know what? Yeah, that's right. It is.
Got to rank
happy
stuff.
Happy birthday to the NHL.
Again, happy today. Birthday. You turned 100 again. You don't want to admit you're 101, but that's okay. We understand. Aging is difficult.
Yep. 100. I've got a piece that is going up on Sportsnet today. Probably is up by the time that people hear this, where I came up with the brilliant idea that it would be fun to rank all 100 NHL seasons.
That's insane. You're a crazy person for even pitching that idea.
To the best. Well,
oh my
God.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, you know, you ever have an idea that seems like a great idea when you pitch it and then you get halfway through and you're like, I've bitten off way more than I can chew here.
This is not worth my freelance rate. Why am I doing this?
It ended up being a bit of a project, but it was fun, and I look forward to it going up so that people can scan it, control F for their personal favorite season when their team won the Stanley Cup, and then call me an idiot
and
because I
bitch at you on Twitter.
53rd.
Everyone knows 92-93 was the sixth best season, not the seventh best season. Sorry.
Yes. That's that will be fun. But yeah, we're at 2007. I did not have 2007 ranked very high. I mean, that wasn't a particularly good season.
So what are your top three? What are your elite NHL seasons? Give me your
My
takes.
Number one, and this is I was saying this to my editor. I'm fully prepared for all sorts of pushback and argument and people telling me I'm wrong. That's why you make a list like this is so you get that generate that kind of discussion. That's the fun of it. The only one I will not accept anyone telling me I'm wrong on is the number one season on the list.
Wait, can I guess what it is?
You can add, it shouldn't even be a guess.
Oh, really?
You should be just simply stating the very obvious fact that there is one season that is head and shoulders far better than any other.
85-86.
No.
87-88.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're guessing, Dave. The best season, hands down, NHL history, 1992-93.
Really? That was because
everything happened that year.
But that was the year that there was, did Tampa come in that year? Ottawa come in that year? I get lost around
Tampa
that.
Tampa and Ottawa did come in, which was like the 14th most newsworthy thing that happened that year. So that was the year that, first of all, you had the Habs go on their crazy run, win their last Stanley Cup. 10 straight overtimes. You had Timo Salani, 76 goal season. You had the Leafs coming back and everything that happened with that playoff run. You had the Gretzky high stick. You had the McSorley stick measurement. You had May Day in Buffalo. You had scoring was crazy. From a Leafs perspective, Doug Gilmore had 127 points and finished seventh in the scoring. Like offense was
yeah.
It was the last great offensive year. Eric Lindros debuts. You had Domi versus Probert. And with all of that, the very best part of the whole season, which was almost ridiculous. I mean, you wouldn't put it in a movie because it would be too over the top, is Mario Lemieux, the best player in the league, leading the league and scoring halfway through, mysteriously vanishes for a few days, reemerges to announce that he has cancer, misses 2 months, and then comes back and regains the scoring title and leads his team to a 17-game win streak, sets the all-time record, and then goes into the playoffs and they get upset by David Volek in Game 7 overtime. Best season ever, easily. No
okay.
Question.
See, here's my thing about the whole season ranking thing. Like, let's say you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan that season. You don't like that season at all. That season sucked for you. You had to watch your crappy Lightning. Yeah,
your first season, you're pretty happy. But yeah, no, you're right. This is like
it's so hard.
Everyone is going to, whatever season your team won is going to be your favorite. And plus the other thing is, and I mentioned this in the article, was like, you know, how much scoring do you like? Did you like it when in the 80s when there was 8 goals a game, or did you think that was way too much? Like, that's going to affect. Do you like fighting? Then you're going to lean towards the 70s, and you know, maybe not so much today's game. How old are you? You know, that I remember reading once somebody said that the best year ever for pop music was whatever year you turned 16.
Right. Yeah.
And
exactly.
It's been garbage ever since then. And it's kind of, there's an element of that. So, the people aren't going to agree with everything.
Were you 16 during that season?
What's that?
Were you 16 during that season?
You were. at the start of the season. I turned 17 during the season.
That's
so
great.
That has nothing to do with anything.
And so what was the second best season, 93-94?
Or 91-92? I think 67 is the second best season. I had 93-94 in the top 10 as well, because I think that was like the sequel that was almost as good, but not quite. I had 93-94 in the top 10, and I had 94-95, I think, in the bottom 10, because you get the first lockout.
Yeah.
Plus Hockey the Devils win the cup and introduce the neutral zone trap and begin the dead puck era that is still ongoing. So, I mean, that was, doing the bottom 10 was almost as much fun, because that'll really make people mad if I picked like the year that your team won the cup.
Okay, but how did you? So
you're going to be coming after me hard.
Obviously, we did the top 100 players list, and that's kind of hard to do when like a lot of the guys we're ranking basically died before we were born, so we never got to watch them play. So we're just going off numbers. So like, how do you go back and look at like the 1923 season and decide how good it was? That's the part I don't get.
What I tried to do is I tried to look at the big picture, because you know we've had this conversation before, like the NHL today is, you know, all the players are 100 times better than they were
right
in the 20s. Like, if you went back in a time machine to watch NHL hockey in the 20s, it would probably be unwatchable. And I did, you know, I tried to sort of factor in, look at everything from the perspective of the era. And I had seasons ranked high from the 40s and from the 50s and even a few from the 30s. But you go back to like the 20s, I don't think I had any of those seasons ranked all that high. And in fact, some of the lowest ones. Like, there was a point 10 years in where there was a season where the NHL averaged less than 3 goals a game. There were 220 games, 120 of them ended in a shutout. and that was the year before they basically legalized the forward pass.
And that was back when guys were like, you don't understand, though. This 0-0 game is just as good as a 4-3 game.
Yeah. They're like, well, what do you want? Some high-scoring, highfalutin 2-1 game? Is that what you... Your generation needs 3 goals a game to be interested? No. Yeah, so, I mean, I can't... Like, I had a big block of games from then, even, like, the first season. I know, like, you know, from a history perspective, 1917-1918, hey, one of the most important seasons ever launched the league. But there were four teams and one of their arenas burned down 5 games into the season. And then there were 3 teams and they just finished the season with 3 teams. Like, that's not a good season. It's an important season, but it's not, you know, when 25% of your league vanishes because their arena burns to the ground, that's not great. It's not optimal.
What was your worst season?
Well, the worst one, that was the easy one. That's the other one that I won't get any pushback on, because I took the 2004-2005 non-season. So,
okay.
The lockout year. That was like my way to ease in, get everyone on board. You know, we all get to agree for one, and then we get to spend 99 spots. Well, 98 spots arguing, and then we get to number one, and no rational person.
Any of the lockout seasons crack the top 50?
No, I think I had top 50. The 2013, the Blackhawks year, I think my summary for that was that it was as entertaining as a lockout season could possibly be, which was to say it was okay. I think I had it like around the middle of the pack, and that was it.
All right. I mean, if I was doing a list, I think I would probably have the same number one as you, even though I was only 14 at the time. But I was 16 during the lockout season, and that was when I loved the Devils, and the Devils won the Cup. And even I could tell you, like, that season, that season is patient zero for why the NHL is bad today. It really is, because that's when Mario Lemieux and everybody got hooked and held, and people were like, oh, you can do this? Let's do this for the next 15 years. And that's how we kind of are where we are today. So apologies to everybody out there. I would have discouraged Devils from doing it, but I was just happy they won at the time, so I didn't care. That's on me. I'm sorry.
The only positive from that season, the only good thing that happened, the rumors that the Devils were going to move to Nashville, even as they were winning the Stanley Cup, that led to Gary Bettman going on Fox for an interview during intermission in New Jersey.
We're not going anywhere. We're staying.
And just getting absolutely destroyed by the fans, because they did it like in front of the crowd. And the crowd, I mean, if you've never seen that YouTube clip, you got to find it, because they are like loud, very clear obscenities being chanted at him. Like that. And then of course they win the cup that night and they just boo the crap out of Gary Bettman, because the feeling was that he wasn't doing anything to stop this team from moving, which was ground zero for booing Gary Bettman. Like, it wasn't an original six team. It wasn't in Canada. It was New Jersey that started that. And it's become the tradition ever since. But that was the one highlight, was Gary Bettman just getting absolutely savaged by New Jersey fans who were 20 minutes away from seeing their team win a Stanley Cup. And they thought at the time 21 minutes away from seeing their team move to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good league. Speaking of how good the league is, this is one thing we wanted to do before we got to the reader mail. The NHL Network every so often puts out a list of stuff. It's best defenseman, best center, best rookies, best all-time, whatever. And the lists are always bad. They really are. Like, I feel like at the NHL Network, people put like 7 seconds of thought into it and it just comes out terribly. But they did one yesterday. I believe it was yesterday. And Mark Lazarus of the Chicago, hold on, let me tap on his thing. I always forget. Sun-Times. There's all those Chicago papers. He loves to screenshot these and tweet them out because I think he just likes to piss people off. But the NHL Network put out the top captains of all time, which I don't know how the hell you're doing that. But number one was Mark Messier. Number two was Jean Beliveau. Three was Yzerman. I guess you had to put Messier one because the NHL made up an award for him. And Jonathan Toews is seventh on the list, ahead of George Armstrong of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Crosby's 10th. Lemieux is 11th. Chara's 19th. Dick
Wayne
Clapper.
Gretzky, number nine.
Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, Wayne Gretzky, who was on all the Oilers teams that Messier was on, is ninth. So that's why they won. It really wasn't so much the talent of Messier and Gretzky. Yeah. It was the leadership. And Daniel Alfredsson checking in at the bottom of the list, number 25. And I don't know why anybody looks at these lists. Anyway.
Can I tell you, I wrote a thing about this for my Friday column, but I'll just reiterate it here. I love this list so much.
You do?
Because I do. And I'll tell you why. Because like you say, the NHL Network does a lot of these rank lists. And as somebody who myself does a lot of these lists, you know, you put them out and nobody's ever happy. People always argue with you. Like I say, that's part of it. You gotta expect that. But there's really two things you can do. Number one is you just kind of shrug and go, okay, this is I'm gonna put the list out there and people won't necessarily agree, but we're gonna have the discussion and that's the point. Or number two is you just go full on troll mode. Mm-hmm. And you say, I'm just gonna make as many people angry as I can. And this clearly is the NHL Network. You couldn't go into a laboratory and design something that was more perfectly put together to just outrage hockey fan. Like, they start off with something that is completely subjective and they have no measurement. Like, when they do their top 25 centers or whatever, like, we can look at the point totals and we can look at this and that. Like, there's nothing here that we can go on. And they just put this list together and you can just see them. I just picture them all sitting around a table just laughing so hard as they're like, put Jonathan Toews ahead of Wayne Gretzky. Put Mario Lemieux, who came back from cancer, outside the top 10.
Put him behind Crosby. It'd be funny.
Like, put him behind Crosby. Let's have, you know, let's put Ron Francis, who got stripped of his captaincy in Hartford, put him ahead of Ted Lindsay, and the other two that I liked that you haven't mentioned is number 21, Darrin Hatcher. Clearly, sure. They just realized they didn't have any Americans on the list, and they had to find Google first American captain win a cup,
and they put him.
And they're like, Darrin Hatcher, really? That wasn't Mike Modano. I'm surprised they didn't put Mike Modano.
Isn't it Kevin Hatcher? It's Kevin, isn't it? Oh, Darrin
had Mike Modano in there, and then took him out after they realized he actually wasn't the captain, and it was Darrin Hatcher, and they had to swap him in at the last minute. Pierre Pilote, who was left off of
the top 100,
top 100, in arguably the biggest non Evgeny Malkin snub, gets the clear makeup call here. Like, this is like when you get high sticked in the face and the ref doesn't see it. So, you know, he just finds a phantom hooking call on the next shift to make it up to you. You're going down the list. I mean, you got the number 5, Ray Bourque.
That's the one that's my favorite because you're doing this list and it's like Mark Messier, bunch of cups, Jean Beliveau, bunch of cups, Yzerman, bunch of cups, Scott Stevens, bunch of cups. And then it's Ray Bourque
who won one cup after asking his own team to trade him somewhere better.
And then Bobby Clark cups, Jonathan Toews cups, all these guys, you know, and Gretzky's behind him. So how I want to know what went on in the conference room in Secaucus when they were discussing this as a round table. Ray Bourque's top 5. Yeah. Why was
Daniel Alfredson, who left his team as a free agent, Joe Sakic, who tried to leave his team as a free agent. People forget he signed with the New York Rangers and in 97, but they matched the offer sheet. So, you know, apparently that was great leadership. And even as soon as you heard that they were doing this list, we all knew Mark Messier was going to be number one, because it is now just taken as gospel in the NHL that Mark Messier is not just the greatest leader in hockey history. He's the greatest leader in the entire history of sports. And maybe just the entire history of the world. You know, pick presidents, generals,
sure,
prime ministers. I think it's Mike Messier, Churchill, you know, maybe a few other guys, but I think it's clearly
Patton.
Mark Messier is the great Patton. Mark Messier is the greatest leader of all time. I have no basis to say that's not the case. I was never a player on a Mark Messier team. Certainly people who were players on his teams have spoken glowingly about his leadership abilities, but can we go down the resume here? Like, captain of the Edmonton Oilers, walked out on his team right before a season started and demanded a trade. Got himself traded to New York, won the Stanley Cup there, walked out on the team again, held out before the start of the next season, nearly missed the banner raising ceremony, which was going to be a big thing in New York, that Mark Messier wasn't going to be there for that, signed a contract a couple of hours before and gets to that game, plays a couple more years in New York, bolts as a free agent to go to Vancouver, becomes the captain of Vancouver, but that's not on the list, it's another small detail that I love, that they list him as the captain of the Oilers and Rangers. And so there's clearly a Canucks fan in the room at the NHL Network to pretend that whole thing never happened. Does 3 years in Vancouver, becomes the most hated player in franchise history, and then comes back to the Rangers for 4 more years and leads them to no playoff spots.
Not a single, and that was back when there was no salary cap, and the Rangers spent all this money on talent, and they still could not crack the top 8 in the conference. Like, it's just
so missed. So walked out on at least one team, maybe two, got himself bought out in Vancouver, and then sued the team, and no playoff appearances in his last 7 years. And this is the guy that we have all agreed is unquestionably the greatest leader that the entire sport has ever seen.
Yeah, Nick Lidstrom's only 10 spots behind them. What are you going to do? We got some time left here to do some of the reader questions that we solicit at Vice Biscuits on Twitter. All one word. I saw you you quote tweeted it. Any questions directly for you that you liked, or do you want to just
dip tell in? You start with a few, and I'll see if I can find one here that.
Okay. Well, see,
that I like.
I always feel bad when people ask questions about the stuff we talked about for the first 30 minutes. But you know what? We gave you the good stuff there, John Morrell. John Fisher wants to know, what would be your ideal outdoor game? Teams, venue, weather, time of year, whatever your heart desires. What would you come up with as your next outdoor game?
Man, what have we not done yet? That's the thing. It's starting to feel like we've kind of covered a lot of it. I mean, the one matchup that they haven't done from a Canadian perspective, is Toronto Montreal, and the problem there is neither city really has a great venue.
Yeah.
To put it in, I wonder if there's like a neutral spot where you could.
What if you could open the roof?
You could do it anywhere.
Open the roof on the Sky Dome. That would be something.
Maybe. You know what would be the best? Is you do Toronto Montreal on Parliament Hill.
Oh, in Ottawa?
And then you just put a camera on Eugene Melnyk, and every Senators fan is there. They're like, wait, you told us we couldn't. And they're like, yeah, we made it work for these two teams.
Yeah, we actually figured it out. Sorry.
Yeah. We got 90,000 fans packed in here, and. That would be it. That the Senators really would wind up in Houston midway through the second period, but like it would be buried on the sixth page of the newspaper the next day.
Bruce Racine.
What would you do as your outdoor?
I already
like your idea, the Tampa Nashville one.
Yeah, Tampa Nashville and Bristol is the thing I always, the Bristol Motor Speedway is the thing I always go to, but that's never going to happen.
Other one is the international idea, like where you go and do it in some other country. I kind of like that. I feel like that's the next step.
But like, is there a big enough, like, obviously, like if you go to England, you can do it at Wembley, you can do it at Twickenham and all those different places the NFL plays. But I don't know, would 80,000 people flock to London to watch, even if it was a really good game?
I feel like you'd have to do it in Europe somewhere. Like, I feel
yeah,
like,
but
like
what's
you know,
the stadium,
like in Sweden or Finland or something, and you had the right players, kind of like what they did this year is sending Carlson and the Senators over, but on a bigger stage. I feel like something like that could work. Yeah, you're right. If you went to a market that wasn't really a big hockey market, you would run the risk of, you don't want 8,000 people in an 80,000 seat stadium.
Yeah, you don't want it to be like an actual Ottawa Senators home game. Bruce Racine wants to know, why doesn't the NHL consider changing the distinct kicking and hitting the puck in with your body parts rules? I think it would increase scoring, albeit marginally, but more importantly, get rid of the gray area that currently exists. I agree, man. Like, I agree too,
but it's a safety issue.
They
don't want players swinging their skates in the crease around goalies. Like, the argument is you've got a goaltender reaching for the puck, and yeah, I mean, he's got a big blocker, a big glove, but he's reaching out with his arm, and you don't want players who have their sticks tied up just swinging and kicking with skate blades, and that the potential for a significant injury of some sort is kind of outweighs the benefit. I'm fine with letting them glove the puck in, obviously not catch and throw it, but bounce it in off, or was it Andrew Shaw who bounced it in off his head a few years ago?
Yeah, he headed it in. Yeah,
we all found out that apparently you can't do that. I'm all for allowing that, and I think they did a good thing by changing the skate rule so that to allow deflections in that. And I think I think that's something you're going to see more and more over time become a thing in the NHL where players get good at making sure their skate's in position to deflect something. But if you let them kick away, it would create some more offense. But I think it would be inevitable that at some point you're going to have somebody really get their arm gashed. And that's what the league wants to avoid.
Their arm? Come on. They're not going to do bicycle kicks in the crease. They're just going to angle their foot.
No, you never know, though. They're going to be, they're going to be swinging away and who knows? It doesn't take much, or even if it's, just a glove's in the wrong place and a wrist gets exposed or something like that. It's a risk that isn't, I don't think is worth taking for something that would add a handful of goals a year, but and ugly looking goals too. It's not like we're opening up the game at all and making it more fun to watch.
I just figure
a few ugly goals I don't think is worth the risk.
I just figure guys are kicking the puck along the wall all the time when they're battling for the puck and they can't get their stick down there and no one's slicing open, feet.
Yeah,
but
nobody's reaching their hand in to grab that puck while that's happening.
Who's reaching there? Oh, you mean like the goalie?
It's the goaltender. Yeah. So yeah. I think that's always the way it's been explained to me, and I think I can I think I can see the logic in that.
How about this? How about the only way you can kick it in is if you actually bicycle kick it in? This way, it's a pretty goal, and in this way, sure. If someone gets cut, it's still a beautiful goal. And
so it's like it'd be like the opposite of the high stick rule. You have to be over the crossbar.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I don't think there's any. There's no. That seems completely safe. Yeah. Let's. Yeah, I feel like that would be all right.
I'm not playing. Who cares?
I'll give you one here.
Go ahead, give me one.
Derek wants to know which team that is solidly in a playoff spot will not make the show in April.
Oh, solidly.
I'm assuming by the show he means the playoffs and not this podcast, because
or Major League Baseball's major leagues, because that's usually what I think of as the show. You know, you got to get to the show. Well, let's see. Entrenched like in the playoffs.
Solidly in.
See, like, I don't really know. Like, in the East right now, the Devils have 43 points, right? But I feel like
the Devils are the pick.
But yeah. They're only 6 points from being out. So, I don't know how solid that is. Let me see. This is a good question.
There's them. And, I mean, the other one is Vegas, but I mean they're 7 points up now. Like, they're building a cushion.
They have a rough schedule.
At some point, I'm gonna have to come around on the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Every week I'm like, should I write the story that says the Vegas Golden Knights are for real? And I'm just like, no, not yet. I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna get roped in yet. I'm gonna say I don't really believe it though, but I'll say St. Louis. Because wow. I feel like, I don't want to pick a team that's only 5-6 points up. And right now they're 9 points clear of a playoff spot. But they've played 35 games. They've played more games than pretty much everybody in the West. I don't really know if I totally buy how good they are based on where they are in the standings. But I just don't know if anyone's going to catch them. But what the hell? I'll say St. Louis.
Okay. That's good. I mean, saying outrageous things that you do not actually believe.
Yeah.
It's an untested strategy in the sports writing world. But I feel like you might be onto something.
You got any more questions you want to do, or do you want to wrap it up?
Scan kind of quickly through, but
producer Mitch has not spoken into my ear yet, so I feel like we're not pressured, but we started late, so maybe he wants us to stop. But who cares? He's another 5 minutes, according to Mitch. Oh, we got plenty of time. Oh, let's do it.
Lots of time then. Lots of people wanted to know about the captain's list.
Jacob Bourne says, which team will end up being better, the U.S. World Junior team or the U.S. Olympic team?
Oh, man, the Olympics is going to be so...
That's a good question.
Like, I hate saying this. I hate saying that, like, oh, the Olympics is going to be bad, the team's going to be terrible, because it's going to be, like, 20 guys who are living their absolute dream and have, you know, worked their entire lives to get there.
Yeah, but it's not going to be good.
I would rather see... if the NHL is not going to be at the Olympics, I'd rather see them do like they do with soccer and do it as like a world junior tournament or something like that. Or my other idea that I pitched a few weeks ago was that they should just break the format completely, ignore all the past rules, and just determine that the women's gold medal is going to be a 7-game series.
Ooh, yeah.
Because we know it's going to be Canada, US. Right.
Right. Well, there's always that the Finnish team has that goaltender, and like I feel like there's one game every tournament where she plays Canada to the U.S. and she has like 55 saves through two periods, but then like she eventually breaks in the third because she's a human being and can't possibly stop 90 of 90 shots. But
well, for my plan to work, it has to be USA Canada. So let's do this. We announce that the gold medal is going to be a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
We do the round robin, and then like when Canada or the U.S. is playing Finland, if they lose that game in the semifinals. We then go, oh, did we not tell you that it's a 2 out of 3?
Yeah.
This is a 2 out of 3. And then.
Then they'll take care of it. Yeah.
And we keep doing it until we get US and Canada. But that, I mean, that would save the Olympics because they're the two best teams. There's a history there and they hate each other, which would be great. Like, I mean, they hate each other in when they play once. So imagine 7 games in 2 weeks. I would watch the crap out of that.
I don't know if they hate each other. Didn't two women on the opposite teams get married and
did,
have a kid?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was the one thing. Yeah. Like the two,
except for that,
they hate each other, except that one player from each team got married and then they recently adopted a child.
It's like, wait, so they didn't all hate each other. They were actually friendly and actually really friendly. Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
I mean, this is your, you want a modern day Romeo and Juliet. I mean, this is, I picture them like sneaking off like onto balconies and stuff to communicate. And because yeah, both of their, forget their families not approving, it's their nations do not approve.
And they're both retired now. So I didn't realize that at first. I thought they were still active, but I was imagining like, how do you lay out the person you love the most in the world while she's skating at you with her head down? Like you have a shot, clean shot. And it's like, well, if I lay her out, she's going to go to the hospital. If she goes to the hospital, see, I got to take care of the kid all week.
That sort of attitude is why America will never beat Canada in hockey.
We're too soft.
Take the shot.
I think that's a good note to end on. I feel like we've touched on plenty of stuff, and we've opened our hearts to the idea that the U.S. and Canada can have love between each other, much like the love we have between us. Well, on that note, I believe you can go to the iTunes and give us 5 stars, even though, you know, we kind of alienated you at the beginning of the podcast with our talk of greed and self-satisfaction. You can go to Twitter and follow us on Twitter at Vice Biscuits. In case you probably follow us on our own Twitter accounts, but we have the Vice Biscuits there just so you can kind of concentrate the biscuits, you know, get the biscuits all in one spot, as opposed to, you know, the leaf scraping and the fact that I'm watching a Friends episode for the 55th time in a row. And thank you for listening. Read Sean's stuff. Read my stuff. I think actually, after all my bitching about doing a list, I think I'm going to do a thing about who the best player is in the NHL currently right now, because I don't think I have the answer as of this moment.
And rank them and be sure to factor in leadership.
Well, I mean, I'm going to weigh it very heavily towards leadership.
Have they ever walked out on their own team? Have they ever attempted to force a trade? Those are the kind of criteria you're looking for.
I always thought I hated Mark Messier more than anybody, but man, you really, really hate Mark Messier. I love it.
No, first of all, you don't hate Mark Messier more than anybody because you're not a Vancouver Canucks fan.
I was a Devils fan as a kid, though. He ruined my 1994 season.
Trust me, man. You can't get. I've never seen visceral hatred for anybody. Certainly, anybody who played for a team like Canucks fans, it's frightening. And I mean, this, like, these are Canucks fans, like they're pretty good at hating things. They burned their city down after a game seven one time, and still nowhere near. If you ever meet a Canucks fan, just like subtly work in some reference to Mark Messier and Trevor Linden and just sit back and watch the fireworks. It's great.
All right, well, that's it for this week. If Mark Messier wants to come on as a guest, just hit us up on Twitter and let us know. See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.